You're with us on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we have Congresswoman Gwen Moore on the line for a conversation about a variety of topics, including health care, lead exposure, elections, news on the national front, lots of things to cover. What are your questions for Congresswoman Moore? What are your biggest concerns? What do you think Washington politicians need to know about Wisconsin at this very moment? Join in at 800-642-1234. Gwen Moore is a Democratic congresswoman from Wisconsin, representing the 4th Congressional District in Milwaukee and several of its neighboring communities. And she served in Congress since she was first elected in 2004. Representative Moore, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Oh, thank you, Kate. Good morning.
Good morning. Let's start this summer when you introduced a bill that would expand Medicaid reimbursement rates for doulas and midwives. And you said at the time it would help low-income mothers and mothers of color who too often experience poor birth outcomes. But there are lots of competing interests here. Dentists and nurses, mental health professionals. There are so many others who want Medicaid rate hikes as well. Are doulas and midwives your top priority for expanding Medicaid?
Well, thanks for that question, Kate. And I think it was a great setup for a conversation about the need to expand Medicaid, period. The reality is that dental, vision, all of these things are important for people's overall health, but you got to be born first. you got to have a good start. And we have found that maternal deaths and infant deaths really rival those in so-called third world countries. So this is a crisis, particularly among women of color. When you can have better outcomes in places like Afghanistan than you can in the United States or indeed in Wisconsin, I would say that that was a crisis.
Aside from Medicaid reimbursement rates, are there other ways that the federal government should be addressing these socioeconomic gaps in birth outcomes?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of evidence. We've talked to doctors that systemic racism, period, really threatens the health of people of color. Whether or not people's symptoms will be taken seriously. I remember way back in the day when I was in my 20s, a former classmate of mine went to the emergency room, and they literally gave her some Tylenol to go home, and she had an ectopic pregnancy. Mm. Where they just didn't take her symptoms seriously, put their best effort forward to address her clearly a painful obstruction in her fallopian tubes. And so, we found this problem compounded over the years, and it's just unnecessary. These are preventable deaths.
Well, let's look at SNAP now. You want the Trump administration to reject these proposed limits on food stamp qualifications. The Trump administration says the limits would close a loophole. What are your concerns here as you see this? And it could save $2.5 billion a year for our country.
Well, and let me just say this. You don't save money at the expense of feeding children. What he wants to do, there are a couple of things he wants to do. Number one, he wants to raise or lower the threshold for eligibility for SNAP down to 130% of the poverty level. I mean, we already know that the poverty level is way far below what it ought to be in terms of what is it, about $16,000 a year. For a family, which of course is impossible for anybody to live on. So 130% of the poverty level is already someone who is in deep poverty. This would put about 4 million people more in deep poverty and not provide them with just basic nutrition. And so that's one thing he wants to do. Another thing he wants to do is to include SNAP as part of public charge. The new rules that were just promulgated would really focus and target immigrants in particular immigrants of color, low-income, poor immigrants, to say that they wouldn't have a path to citizenship if there were any uptake of the use of SNAP. This would mean that immigrants would find themselves being hungry when otherwise they might be eligible for SNAP. And this is just another inhumane way of, you know, poking a finger in the eye of immigrants.
Talking about national political issues with Congresswoman Gwen Moore from Milwaukee, you can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. What issues in your community should Congress be addressing? What are your top concerns? What do you think about food stamps and lead abatement programs, drug prices, birth outcomes? Join in at 800-642-1234. Congresswoman Moore, as we talked there briefly about immigration, this year President Trump moved $3.6 billion in funding for military base projects to pay for the border wall. And we recently learned some of this money would have funded a small arms range for Wisconsin's Air National Guard. And Senator Ron Johnson says Congress will approve new funds to cover that project. What is your view here of moving funds toward the border wall?
Well, you know, with all due respect to Senator Johnson, our senator, you know, he's covering his behind with those comments. We work hard. It is really a hard negotiation to get a budget done. And we had we worked toward getting these funds for the Defense Department. And as a matter of fact, the Pentagon has pushed back on this notion that we're going to just allow the administration, you know, to hijack, to steal the money, and, oh, we can just backfill it. No, not only do they want to take $3.7 billion out of the fiscal year budget, but prospectively in the fiscal year 20 budget, he wants to take another $8 billion plus for his border wall. You know, the president promised folk a border wall. He said Mexico was going to pay for it. I've even had an initiative to create an account so that, you know, Mexico could deposit the money for this border wall. We need border fencing. There have been we have appropriated dollars in Congress to fix up fencing where it's appropriate. But even Republicans and especially I'm thinking of Will Hurd, who just resigned, who has more border with Mexico than any other member of Congress, has indicated that this is just stuck on stupid, waiting on dumb to come, to spend all this money on a border wall. There are much more effective ways to protect our border, and we need to use these funds for more electronic and technological surveillance, as well as providing more personnel. Mm. When you talk to people, they say you need people and not walls.
Congresswoman Gwen Moore is with us as we talk about issues facing Congress, issues on immigration. Are you worried about health care, the economy, gun violence, border security, as we've been talking about? What are your thoughts here? What are your priorities? What do you want Capitol Hill lawmakers to act on now? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll stay with Representative Moore, pick up this conversation in just a moment. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. The morning show here on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kan. Thanks for being here. We have Congresswoman Gwen Moore on the line from Washington, and we're checking in on a number of issues on the Hill, including, we'll get to the status of a stopgap spending measure to keep the government open past September 30th. What are your questions for Congresswoman Moore? What are your concerns? 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. Congresswoman Gwen Moore from Milwaukee stays with us. We have a tweet here. Dave is asking, why do Democrats seem to be totally on board with President Trump's military exploits? Dave says, drone bombing, occupying Iraq and Afghanistan, arming Israel. What do you think here in terms of how Democrats are responding on the international front, Congresswoman?
Well, Kate, you know, with all due respect, I reject the premise of his question. I mean, I'm a Democrat, and I am definitely not on board with all of these military exploits. You know, Democrats have taken the leadership in demanding a new authorization to use military force. I've signed on to that. We are very concerned that the authorization, even before I became a member in 2001, has really been exploited for all kind of military excursions since then. And I'm telling you, I mean, what keeps me up at night recently is this whole notion that we're going to protect Saudi oil fields. You know, these folks who have, the bone drill killers that you know, we're going to put our troops and our military assets and resources.
What should our response be to Iran?
Well, you know, we're not under any obligation. We have sold a lot of weapons to Saudi Arabia. You know, it's their responsibility to protect their terrain and their assets and their resources. I mean, President Trump, for example, has said we're not going to be the police of the world. So why make the first exception Saudi Arabia? We don't have a formal agreement with them versus our strong relationship with NATO. You know, so it seems so counterintuitive to me for us to be backing away from our strategic and historic alliance with NATO, and yet we're going to double down on a relationship with Saudi Arabia. This is something, and if we're going to do anything, he needs to come to Congress with that. And not make some unilateral decision from the White House based on an old authorization to use military force.
Well, let's go to the phones now. Let's go to Chris joining us from Port Wing. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I was wondering what the Congresswoman thought about the potential for creating meaningful, good jobs through the climate justice movement. It seems like there's a great opportunity for economic growth and dealing with a real critical problem.
Chris, thanks for the call. Congresswoman Moore, what about climate and creating jobs?
You know, Chris, I think you're spot on. And I think that, you know, not only, would this save our planet, but it would create a whole new economy. And I think that it requires a tremendous investment. I think it's so important to realize that even though the president pulled us out of the Paris Climate Agreement, that the private sector is still going forth with these initiatives because they know that it will make money for them. And so, Chris, I think you're spot on, and I am all about that. Now, what iteration of that we finally adopt? Is where the fight is.
We talked with Senator Ron Johnson earlier this week, and we were touching on earlier about NAFTA and the replacement for it, the United States-Mexico-Canada trade agreement. It seems as if Democrats here are on board with it. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said earlier this week that they're on a path to yes. Do you support that agreement?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm a member of the Committee on Ways and Means, but there has been a panel that the Speaker has put together of members that include members of the Committee on Ways and Means and the Subcommittee on Trade, in addition to other members who have really spent a lot of time and effort on these agreements. And so those initiatives will come back to us for final approval. But I think that there are still some sticking points, Kate, and the working group is focusing on four areas that the caucus has identified that this USMCA is falling short. And that is you know, strong enforcement mechanisms for the labor rules that Mexico has adopted. Really, access to affordable medicines, the chapter on pharmaceuticals, the environmental rules, and again, the enforcement for all of the above. And so I think that we're waiting on the U.S. Trade Representative, Mr. Lighthizer, to really get back to us and try to figure out where we can come to some compromises and some agreements on these elements.
Let's bring in Patrick now in Richland Center. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, good morning, and thank you for the program.
Sure.
Congresswoman, I got a question for you. I've been talking to both Republicans and Democrats about the immigration issue. Everybody agrees that the way to solve it is simply, instead of going after the poor employees, the undocumented help, you go after management and ownership that hires them. And in fact, the media recently, when they had the raids in Mississippi, tried to put it on the radar screen by pointing out that nobody from ownership was arrested or in any way penalized for hiring all these people. So you Democrats didn't even take the opportunity that the media gave you to make this part of the discussion. So what is going on here?
Thank you, Patrick. Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, Patrick. Good morning. You know, if you made the point, not a single person who was an employer was cited or arrested, that this was all part of the daytime talk show. You know, I would have to say, Patrick, that our heads are spinning. Every single, it wasn't just that the president did this that day. I mean, every single day we're on the reality show with him. And I think that, you know, one of the things that I think this is a little bit unfair with your comment is that Democrats aren't doing anything. And at the same time, we're criticized for spending too much time you know, trying to impeach him, trying to raise issues about his flawed policies and about his behavior when we are working on this. You know, Patrick, we both know that comprehensive immigration reform needs to be the thing that's on the table. And in fact, you know, when we start talking about enhancing our economic position, in this sphere of the world, this comprehensive immigration would raise the wages of these immigrants. It would prevent competition between, say, Mexicans and Americans, you know, who are being paid under the table by these unscrupulous employers who are exploiting the labor and immigration status of people. And according to CRS, our Congressional Research Service, we're looking at more than $1 trillion over a 10-year budget window of economic benefit just from doing comprehensive immigration reform. And so, you know, I'm a person who spends daily criticizing the president on his policies. And you're right. The Mississippi raid was yet another theme in the reality show series.
Well, let's make sure we get to budget here. We spoke with Senator Johnson about this at the chance of another government shutdown as we see September 30th coming. He voiced his concerns. House Democrats and Senate Republicans remain far apart on spending.
Right now, the signs aren't very good. We're going to be taking a test vote on, I think we're going to bring up the defense appropriation bill, and what we're hearing, it's not very positive, that the Democrats do not really want a regular order type of appropriation process.
So what is your view on the chances of a government shutdown as the budget deadline approaches?
Well, Kate, I mean, I'm suppressing my hysterical laughter from just listening to your little blurb there of Senator Johnson talking about how the Democrats don't want a deal. You know, as I indicated earlier in the program, you know, just a teeny tiny sticking point is that, you know, the Republicans want over $8 billion to be taken out of the fiscal year budget for that stupid wall, in addition to $3.7 billion from fiscal year 19. You know, now, you know, and the Pentagon has pushed back.
So do you think we will be able to get a continuing resolution in?
Well, you know, we may be able to get a continuing resolution, but the continuing resolution, there would have, we'd have to agree to backfill the $3.7 billion from fiscal year 90. Now,
we have to, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me. Let's do this again.
Gwen Moore is a Democratic congresswoman from Wisconsin representing Milwaukee and the neighboring communities. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. We're learning about a new group that's coalescing around gun safety legislation. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. They're made up of activists and faith leaders and business owners, and they're calling themselves the 80% Coalition. And that's a nod to a recent Marquette University Law School poll that found 80% of Wisconsin voters support a new law to make private gun sales and sales at gun shows subject to background checks. So do you support expanded or universal background checks for gun purchases here in Wisconsin? Do you support red flag laws, or do you think they violate due process? We're at 800-642-1234. Daryl Morin is president of Forward Latino and is leading the 80% Coalition. It's made up of two dozen organizations of community advocacy and the business groups that are urging state lawmakers to take up gun control legislation. Daryl, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. It's wonderful to be here with you this morning.
Well, what is the 80% Coalition? You know, what is it, and what are you urging lawmakers to address here?
Well, we're just a group of non-traditional partners, actually. Everything from business organizations, advocacy groups, student groups, faith-based organizations, et cetera, coming together with the realization that we need to change the way things are. Let me just clarify this, too. Let me tell you what we're not. We're not this organization looking around to take guns out of everybody's hands. No, that's not it. Our mission truly is about public safety and improving the quality of life and the safety throughout all of Wisconsin.
How did all of these groups find each other? How did you find these partners?
It actually was rather organic. We were planning for, Latino was planning to do something following the tragedy in Gilroy, California. For the following weekend, and then we had what turned out to be El Paso in Dayton. So from 18 hours from the time we announced we were going to have a vigil, we had 42 different organizations come from throughout the state of Wisconsin wanting to stand there and remember those lost. And it was at that moment they said, you know, it's one thing to offer our thoughts and prayers, which we're doing now, but we really need to engage. And then the Marquette Law School poll came out, right, with that very compelling evidence. 88% of households that don't have guns are in favor of closing these loopholes, and 75% of those who do agree that we need to close these loopholes. And we came together and said, wait a minute, if the overwhelming majority of Wisconsinites, right, the voters agree we need this, why can't our legislators come together and agree on what needs to be done?
So you found yourselves in a moment at a vigil, you know, expressing the sadness for these attacks. You're also asking Wisconsin lawmakers to pass a resolution condemning the recent acts, you say, of domestic terrorism. Why do you think the resolution is necessary?
We're going through a very divisive time right now. We've seen an uptick in hate crime across the United States over the last couple of years. And when we saw the tragedy, which we just commemorated recently at September 11th, we thought it was important that once again, government did, that we we stated what our position was on hate, on terrorism, etc. And when you see these acts, act after act, where the perpetrators have admitted why they did what they did, we think it gives our lawmakers an opportunity to say, hey, we're going to stand up for American principles. We're going to state that loudly. There's no place for hate in Wisconsin. There's no place for hate in our country or any other kind of violent ideology. So,
as you say, the 80% coalition is not about taking guns out of people's hands, but it is in support of expanded background checks on all gun sales in Wisconsin. What would that look like?
Yeah. So right now, and on the books right now, the law says if you're a convicted felon, if you're convicted of domestic abuse or have some other things that have been put against you, you're not allowed to own a firearm. And while we're very pleased to see that there are background checks at some level, that requirement only applies to people buying firearms from a licensed dealer. So, and that has stopped over 3.5 million sales of firearms to individuals who had this block on them. However, there's been a secondary market that's blossomed on the internet. And we also know about gun shows, etc. And since those are considered private sales, there's no requirement for a background check. And that's how, the person in Middleton, the mass shooter there, got their firearms in Azan in Brookfield, Wisconsin. You know, that's how they skirted the law and were able to get it. So we think it's reasonable to have that background check on everyone.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Daryl Morin. He's president of Forward Latino, leading the 80% coalition, as we've been talking about. This is a group that's urging Wisconsin lawmakers to pass gun safety legislation. You can join in this conversation, 800-642-1234. Where do you come down on expanded background checks and red flag laws? How do you feel about the 80% coalition and its message? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Steve now, joining us from Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve. Good morning.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I do want to quickly correct your guess that just because you're at a gun show and selling a gun doesn't mean there's not a background check. If you're a licensed dealer at a gun show, you still have to do a background check. And most of the people at gun shows are licensed dealers. So I want to correct that because that's something that's not true. My question, though, really is about universal background checks. What are we going to do as punishment for people who don't comply with this new law, considering most judges basically do nothing for felons that are attempting to buy a gun today and let them back on the street where most crime comes from? What are we going to do to people who don't comply with the law? Again, considering we don't do anything now.
Daryl, go ahead. Yeah.
No, so I want to thank you for bringing up that point. So whenever there's a private sale, that's when there is no requirement there. So there are folks that dealers who are at gun shows, et cetera. It isn't required. Well, the dealers are required by law, but anybody else isn't. So I appreciate the caller pointing that out. And there is a need. There is a need. And when I talk with a lot of members of law enforcement over this, to talk with the judges and some of the DAs about the need to further enforce the law when they catch a convicted felon with a firearm, is it really enough just to give them probation or a warning or to follow through with some of the penalties that should follow that? So agreement there by all that there needs to be greater enforcement by some of the things that are already on the books as well.
What would you say to those who think that this is a really slippery slope and they're worried that gun control legislation may be infringing on their Second Amendment rights, that this will one law will lead to the next?
So with regards to expanding the background checks or closing loopholes, the law is already on the books that say these people, right, shouldn't have a firearm. So there really is no change with regards to that in Second Amendment rights, et cetera. So
the 80% coalition is also urging the legislature to pass extreme risk protection orders. That's more commonly known as red flag laws, where you go seek the judge when you think someone could be harmful with a firearm. What does the coalition, you know, why does the coalition back that policy? Yeah.
So let me just start off by saying we already have something like that on the books right now. If you're a spouse and you believe you're in danger from your spouse, right, who has a firearm, you can go ahead and seek the removal of that firearm. That's already on the books here in Wisconsin. What we're calling for is an expansion of that so that if you have a family member who thinks that you're an imminent risk to yourself or to others, if there's a member of law enforcement that believes you're an imminent risk to yourself or others, that they could go to a court using the same process that exists already, right, for those spouses in a domestic situation. And if they can prove their case and the defendant can't show that they're not at risk, that they can then enable law enforcement to remove the firearm until the threat's no more.
Assembly Speaker Robin Voss has said that red flag laws take people's constitutional rights away from them before they even commit a crime because they could. Do red flag laws eliminate due process?
I think what we're calling for is that assurance that there's due process there, that there is an independent body, right? The judge is the arbiter, that everybody be given access to present their case, et cetera. And once again, only if there's an imminent threat proven is it removed. The mother of the shooter in El Paso called the police department. He said, "My son just got this firearm. I don't think he should have this firearm." And the police just went down the checklist. Yep, he's lawfully able to have it. There's nothing we can do. And then several weeks later, we have El Paso.
There are 24 members involved in your coalition. You mentioned education groups, healthcare organizations, faith communities. Why do all of these different organizations have a stake in gun policy, and can they find enough common ground even though they come from all these different areas of society?
Yeah. That's what's been so amazing. Even the Archdiocese of Milwaukee, all these different religions have really come. And I don't just think of them as a faith-based organization, right, which they are, but they're also one of the largest education providers in the state. Right. And we know that firearms aren't just a mass shooting issue, even though it is a huge concern. It's not just an individual act of violence issue. Right. But suicide, people taking their own lives. Right. 72% of all gun deaths in the state of Wisconsin come from people taking their own lives. You know, it's not the urban cities, et cetera, where all the crime festers or, you know, what some perceptions are. This is happening in rural Wisconsin everywhere. 672 deaths in 2017, 72% of those were from people taking their own life with a firearm. And we also know that you're three times more likely to attempt suicide if you have access to a firearm than if you don't.
We're talking about the advocacy work of a new group. It's called the 80% Coalition, and they're pushing Wisconsin lawmakers to pass gun safety legislation. Daryl Morin is president of Forward Latino, and he's leading the coalition's cause. Do you think gun policy should be addressed at the federal level, or does a state-by-state approach make more sense? How do you think lawmakers should address gun legislation if a special session is called? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to this in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about a new group that wants to hold town hall meetings on gun safety legislation and get bills passed in this area. They're called the 80% Coalition, and we're hearing from the leader. Do you think grassroots advocacy is an effective course of action here in the debate over gun control and laws and policy related to the use of firearms? How do you feel about expanded or universal background checks for gun purchases in Wisconsin? 800-642-1234. Daryl Morin is president of Forward Latino, and he's leading the 80% Coalition. He stays with us. Let's go to the phones now. Jill is joining us from Mineral Point. Hi, Jill.
Good morning. Thank you. My question was about, it's funny that he mentioned the mother of the shooter. How do we get through to those who don't have any criminal background or who slip through the mental health cracks? Is there a chance or a way to have a medical background more at the primary level and not so much just in psychiatry? Even those people who even tried any kind of antidepressant or anti-anxiety medication. I can take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Jill. Yeah.
So, excellent question. There's a lot of debate going on right there, and I don't want to vary too far out of my lane or area of expertise here, but I think that we're doing what we're doing because we realize there's a wide breadth of people that have perpetrated these things in the past. I don't want to see one category stigmatized over the other because we know this has happened across all demographics. Is there a need, obviously, to do more on mental health, et cetera? Yes, there are. There are far too many urban cities that where the law enforcement is the primary mental health provider, which they're not trained to do, et cetera. But I don't want to stigmatize any one group. You know, when we look in El Paso and other places, people who were acquaintances or friends of those who perpetrated those, perfectly normal, seemed fine, et cetera. We knew were extreme in their views, but they were driven more by hate or other things than any kind of mental defect or disease. So.
Let's go to Kevin now, joining us from Deerfield. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. Yeah, my thoughts are similar to the previous caller. I have not studied the statistics, but it seems like many of the perpetrators of the mass shootings and lesser gun-related crimes will be able to, they obtain the guns legally. They will be able to pass background checks. I don't understand why that is the focus of the discussion on how to deal with this.
What should the focus be, Kevin?
I think we need nothing will ever change until we make it illegal for people to possess high-powered assault rifles, high-capacity rifles. We don't need to have them. We have no need for them in our society.
Kevin, I
also think handguns are more of a liability than any sort of a redeeming.
Yeah, Kevin, line. I want to pause right there and ask Daryl, with the 80% coalition, what does the coalition think about assault rifles and the like?
We haven't taken a position on that. I will share with you, we have members who are a part of it who hunt, et cetera. That being said, you could question what's really required for hunting. So we haven't taken a position there. I will tell you that just in my conversations with industry experts, there seems to be more consensus around limiting the size of high-capacity magazines, right, et cetera, than the assault rifles. But it is a discussion that's being had all over the country at this moment, so.
Talking with Daryl Morin, he's president of Forward Latino, and he's leading the 80% Coalition. That's a group urging Wisconsin lawmakers to pass gun safety legislation. Still time for you, 800-642-1234. Daryl, Governor Evers has signaled his desire to call a special session to pass gun legislation, and Republican leaders of the Assembly and Senate, they oppose that idea that we've seen. Is it important to the 80% Coalition that the legislature convene in a special session to pass gun bills?
We think it's an important thing for them to do. I know when they first met with the governor, they stated they really didn't have any legislation to look at. So we know that there's been a bill that's been made available and shared with them that would close the loopholes that we've been discussing this morning. And we're hopeful that shortly here that there will be some other legislation following with regards to the ERPOs or the extreme risk protection orders. But, you know, I know many are trying to frame this as a political debate. The people of Wisconsin have already answered given their answer, right? Whether you're a gun owner, whether you're not, the overwhelming majority say we need these changes. 80% said let's close the gun the loopholes and the background checks. 81% said let's get extreme risk protection orders. So the Republicans and Democrats of Wisconsin have already made their choice, right? Now we just need the legislators to be willing to do the will of the people. So.
Let's go to Justin now in Lone Rock. Justin, your thoughts?
Yeah, hi. My comment would be on that, and it's a pleasure to meet you on the thing, by the way. I'm in favor of what you're doing for the most part, but with the red flag was that if I get mad at you and I say that, you know, I think he's a threat, he threatened me, I can lie about it, and would that, you know, do I have the right as under the red flag law to be there during and know who my accuser is or who the person that brought this up is?
What are the protections,
you know, because
it
opens
there?
A whole new, yeah, it brings up a whole can of worms that needs to be straightened out. And as far as, you know, if anybody's been on medication, at that, as a lady said earlier, that opens up, you know, Pandora's box completely, because a woman who had children who had a slight case of, you know, postpartum depression, well, and needed meds for a few weeks, you know, that would tag her.
Let's pause right there, Daryl. What are protections with the red flag laws when someone does come forward and says, I think this family member is a threat?
Exactly. So I think everyone's very concerned with the potential for false accusation. You know, we've seen it. There's an argument. There's a dispute. One party wishes frustration, right, on the other party, et cetera. But obviously, we need to keep the public health right perspective is paramount. But every what we're calling for in every draft of legislation that we've seen and that's been introduced over the last several years actually had some built-in tools there. So if somebody knowingly makes a false accusation or provides false information, they would be subject to prosecution under a felony, right? So there is skin in the game now for the accuser to help offset that. Other versions of the bill had made it both a felony and subject up to like a $10,000 fine, et cetera. So I agree there needs to be equal protection. It needs to go before an independent body. It needs to be a judge. The person who's been accused needs to have a chance to represent themselves, defend their positions, et cetera. But all legislation that we've seen that we'll endorse would require some kind of additional protection to make sure that no false accusations were being made.
The 80% coalition, you named organizations, representing organizations. What about the citizens and voters of Wisconsin? How will the coalition engage on a local level?
So we're going to be announcing some town halls in some very strategic locations. And we're asking everyone, this isn't something that you sit back and say, what can I do? It's easy. Go online. You can go to our website, right, and find the phone number for your state legislator. And you call them, and your federal legislator as well. Right. This isn't just a Wisconsin thing. This is it's a federal thing as well. And share with them your concerns. Far too many people know somebody who's fallen victim to gun violence. Right. This is very personal. We need to make sure Wisconsin and the people of Wisconsin are driving the agenda here and not outside influences.
What do you want to accomplish at these town halls?
Educating people. Their perception is, once again, that crime and gun violence only happens in urban areas. We know that's not true, right? 72%, as I mentioned earlier, are individuals taking their own lives. A study just came out that last year, nearly 40,000 lives were lost due to firearms, right? 40,000. That's a good-sized town, right? 2,500 of those, almost 2,500 of those, school-age children. And we continue to see year after year, right? And it's a big fear. This year, for the first time ever, parents are actually debating, what can I do without so I can buy my child that bulletproof backpack? What does that say about where we are today?
Daryl, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Daryl Morin is president of Forward Latino, leading the 80% coalition. Just ahead, a judge ruled that a Wisconsin college violated a student's First Amendment rights. We'll look at free speech on campus. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.